Welcome to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping Orange County, with your host, Don Camber.
Hello, live from the OC Talk Radio studios at UCI's Beal Applied Innovation Center. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Don Camber with another great guest positively impacting our community. Today, I welcome Family Support Network of Orange County Executive Director Moira Byron. She's also on the Cal Optima Health Board. The Family Support Network provides services offering resources and advocacy for families and children with social, emotional, intellectual, and physical needs so they may reach their full potential. Thank you, Moira, for being on Impact OC.
Thank you, Dawn. It's lovely to be here. I'm really excited about today.
Moira, please share with us the demographics of the families you serve, special needs and at risk, and how they are served.
Of course. Well, our program is pretty unique. We have a number of departments within our agency. We have three different departments. One we call Resilient Families, one we have for Special Needs, and one for Early Childhood. So the demographics, the age groups, the folks that we work with are everyone from newly born to elderly. And so in our Early Childhood program, we specialize in our developmental screenings. We've been doing comprehensive developmental screenings all over the county for over 25 years. We subcontract with a number of providers, and we screen children from 0 to 5 in preparation for kindergarten and school services. And they meet with therapists for occupational therapy, physical therapy, dental care, vision, audiology, speech and language, and behavioral health. And so they go through these screenings, and we provide the families with the information to share with education providers, with doctors, with anyone that they may need referrals to for resources and services. So that happens out of our early childhood department, along with our Voice Options program, which is a program that works with children of all ages and adults. And we provide communication devices for assistive technology for those that have language disabilities. So for example, today we had a gentleman who was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's and is rapidly losing his ability to speak. And so we outfitted him today with a communication device so that he can still communicate with his wife. We have also in that program, a program called Bloom Behavior Coaching. And so any of the families that come to our developmental screenings and others that are referred to us from the community are available for or able to have behavior coaching with some of our behavior coaches. And they work with the families one-on-one to help them implement some techniques within their home to help them manage their children's behaviors. The kids that are seen are usually ones that have not yet been diagnosed with a particular diagnosis of any kind. So they aren't on the spectrum. They aren't having developmental delays or anything that we can really pinpoint, but the families are having difficulty with behaviors. And so our coaches get in there with the families and work with them for 5 sessions, trying to assist them in sort of managing those behaviors. And then while they're doing that, they're making connections to more therapeutic resources in the community. So that's just in our early childhood department. Our special needs department, we have 2 contracts with the Regional Center of Orange County, and we provide, we call them family liaisons, and the family liaisons work with the families of individuals with special needs to make sure that they have all of the resources available to them in the county. So that would be generic resources, anything from making sure that they have Medi-Cal or medical insurance to in-home support services to respite care, to day programs, to anything that you can imagine, vocational programs. Our family liaisons get in with the families and make sure that they're connected to the appropriate resources out in the community so that these families can have a little bit of ease of mind for their loved one. We also have a program called Resilient Families. And in that department, we have 2 contracts with Social Services Agency. One is for families in the process of reunification. So their children have been removed from their home. And I have staff members, parent mentors, that work with those folks that have lived experience. They've gone through the same processes and the same things that these families have gone through. And so they meet with the families, they walk them through the court process, they work them through parenting classes, any of the court-mandated courses that they need to take, they make sure that they take them, and they work with them to help them get on a better foot when they get their kiddos back. And then our last program is our wraparound program, and we provide support services to all of wraparound Orange County. So we do the training for the parent partners that are on those teams that work with wraparound. We provide resources such as emergency needs supplies like food and clothing. And we also do all the data collection for the county. So we report it back to the social services agency so that they can report that back to the Board of Supervisors. So we have a wide variety of things that we do, along with emergency needs, things for anybody who kind of needs it through a social worker or the hospitals. If there's something specific that the family needs and their social workers reach out to us, we can often find a donor that will provide that service to them, whether it's a crib or a food box or something like that.
What is considered special needs?
So special needs are any variety of things. It can be anything from a developmental delay intellectually to a physical medical delay. And I use my own daughter as an example. I have a 24-year-old who had a stroke prior to birth. So she has cerebral palsy. She's nonverbal, non-ambulatory, and developmentally delayed. So she is the epitome of what a special needs student or child would be, a young adult. They need all the help they can get. They need full-time care. We have clients that have very significant medical needs. They need full-time nursing. It can be anything from that to folks that are having developmental delays in terms of education, in terms of intellect, and being able to cope with schooling and those kinds of things. We also work with families of kids that have mental health issues, anxiety, depression, those kinds of things that are embedded in possibly an autism diagnosis. So there's a whole range of definitions that go along with the disability community and what their particular issue is or how we can particularly help them is all personalized. It's very individual, dependent upon what they need.
Can you walk us through what your daughter goes through?
Sure. You know, with our daughter, she was fortunate enough to be able to participate in a school-based program from the time she was 3 until the time she graduated at 22. With her particular diagnosis and her particular needs, she was in adult transition program at Esperanza Education Center in Mission Viejo until she graduated when she was 22. And unfortunately, at the crux, at the middle, at the height, however you want to put it, of COVID is when she graduated. And so she ended up coming home and being home with my husband and I 24/7. And she didn't have a day program because at that point, day programs had not reopened. And so she went through quite a few different behavioral challenges, physical challenges. Her routine had been completely upended. And so that was very difficult for her. But thankfully, we now have her in a wonderful day program at Reimagine in Santa Ana. And she goes every day and she enjoys the day. They have music class and cooking classes and communication classes and computer classes and physical therapy and all those kinds of things that she needs to keep active. And she gets to be with friends and socialize. And so it's a really beautiful opportunity for her.
So the idea is to keep the mind active.
Absolutely.
So that she could eventually be somewhat independent.
Well, she's probably never going to be independent. She's fully dependent for all of her care. But there are a wide range of disability levels. And so there are a lot of kids, a lot of adults who are going to be independent and who are capable of being independent, and they just need a little assistance. So there are coaches out there. There are vocational coaches that can help them hold down a job. Most of them work through the Regional Center of Orange County, which provides that service for them so that they can get the assistance they need. They might need somebody to come in, and if they're living independently, to make sure that they have food in their refrigerator, make sure that they are paying their bills or doing those kinds of things so that they can be independent. And so we kind of work with Regional Center when we have a client like that to make sure that they have someone who can be a personal assistant to them in a way.
Is there a certain diagnosis that you have more students with that kind of diagnosis?
Not necessarily. I think, it's pretty broad across the range of services. The range of needs is for a wide variety of different kinds of things. We have different extremes. You know, autism is known as a spectrum disorder. So there can be mild autistic behaviors. There can be very significant autistic behaviors. It's very different for each kiddo. We talk about comorbidities with that clientele in terms of what they might have in terms of anxiety or depression, frustration, that they're, you know, keen and they understand what's going on around them, but they might not be able to express themselves very well. And so that can be a frustration. And so we, as an agency, we take those folks along with the families of individuals that are significantly medically involved or educationally involved or those sorts of things, and we try to assist them to find resources in the community that might be a good way for them to get some independence, to be able to enjoy their life and be part of a bigger community other than just being in their home and being stuck in their home.
Do you have any stories you can share with us with some of the people who've been through your program who you didn't think maybe they weren't going to be able to be independent but are independent now?
You know, there's so many. Before I became the director at Family Support Network, I was a parent mentor, a family liaison there for 15 years. So I still have families that I actually was in the NICU with them when their babies were born. And I still follow those families and I've been involved in their lives for many, many years. And I can tell you there are numerous families that doctors did not give them much opportunity or thought that they were going to be very successful. And now their kiddos are 18, 19, 20 years old and happy and functioning and going to day programs and enjoying life with their families. And so I think that's kind of a mistaken idea. I think, you know, even with my own daughter, I remember them telling us, you know, she probably won't live past 5. So just prepare for that. You know, joke's on them. She's 24. But, you know, that's kind of the common thread is that doctors and medical physicians have to tell you what they think might happen, but that doesn't mean it will. And so what we kind of pride ourselves on is the ability to help those families manage some of these more emotional decisions, some of these frustrations, and kind of work with them throughout their lives. A lot of our families stick with us for a very long period of time. And so we have the joy of getting to see these kids grow up and see their families kind of manage their situations. I like to kind of think back on some of the families we had, and I realized, you know, when they were born, the stories that they were told or the ideas that they were given about what their child's quality of life would look like. And yet we have kiddos that have been in commercials for Target. They've been in, you know, very productive out in the community and doing things in their lives that is just, it's fabulous. Kids that have very rare disorders that have been able to function and get a job and move on. So, you know, there's always hope. We believe in that.
Specifically, what kind of programs help them to be independent?
Well, it really depends. Like, again, everything is very independent. It's very dependent upon their condition or their diagnosis. You know, the school system has a process to go through with their IEP, their individualized education plans. There are levels of involvement. So depending upon if they're special education qualified, then they're probably likely going to have assistance through most of their educational experience. There's a educational component for graduation credits and getting your certificate of graduation or just getting a certificate basically saying that you completed school, but it's not the same as a diploma. So it really depends on, you know, what the condition is and what's going on. But there are vocational coaches. For example, at my daughter's school at Esperanza, one of their programs is to get those kids out into the community and to find jobs for them and help them to transition into that independence and to be able to find jobs and to go out and work in the community. So there's lots of opportunities out there. You just have to find the right niche for everyone.
And the idea is to know where they're coming from in order to reach them so that you can get them to be independent.
Correct. Correct. And you have to have a realistic attitude, too. You have to know how independent they're going to be, how much is going to be available to them in the community. I think one of the most frightening things that we work with a lot are the families who are elderly now and their adult children who have special needs and that are very significantly involved are still living with them or still at home with them. and the families don't have a transition plan. They don't know where they're going to be sending their loved one. They don't know how that's going to look. And so they try to hold on as long as they can. And eventually it becomes an issue with, in the state of California, there's 21 regional centers throughout the state that helps manage the long-term planning for individuals with significant special needs that are developmentally delayed and will not be able to live independently on their own. And so making sure that those families are connected, making sure that their loved one is on a waiting list, perhaps for a residential facility if they need it, just making sure that they have the peace of mind to know that there's going to be someone somewhere for their loved one to go.
So you take people of all ages.
I mean,
you could, if someone is diagnosed as being autistic as an adult and they realize they have deficits, they could go to your program.
Right. Well, and it, basically what we do is we work with Regional Center very closely. So all of our clients are Regional Center clients. So what we do is we give them a little bit more hand-holding, a little bit more attention, because they might be a little more needy or need something else that that Regional Center can't provide in the moment. The service coordinators at Regional Center can have hundreds of cases at a time. And so we try to limit those cases so that our parent mentors, our family liaisons, can work more closely with the families and really give them that one-on-one care. It's not unheard of for our liaisons to be on hold with Social Security or with Medi-Cal or with in-home support services for hours at a time with these families, just trying to help them maneuver a very, very difficult system of complex care. And so our mentors are right there with them and hold their hands and walk them through all of it. And they're all bilingual, so they all speak Spanish, and they help those families as well.
And you help the family, not necessarily just the student.
No, not the individual. It, you know, it very often, dependent upon the severity of the involvement, it is the caregivers who really need the assistance because they're overwhelmed. You know, if you've ever had to deal with a doctor's office and make an appointment and go to the doctor, and then you have a procedure and you have to follow up with the insurance policies or you have to follow up with paperwork, multiply that by about 50. And that's a lot of what our families are dealing with. And it becomes very, very overwhelming to them because they're not just dealing with maybe a medical condition, but an intellectual condition or perhaps a mental health issue or, you know, placement. Or sometimes we have, you know, single parents, fathers whose wives are no longer with them and they're taking care of their adult daughters with special needs, or, you know, young women who are single and having to figure out what to do with their children when they really don't know how they're going to make their next meal. All of those kinds of things. So we work with everyone.
So if someone has an emergency and they can't feed their family, they could go to your network and get help?
They can call us and we can definitely connect them to other resources in the community. We are very intricately involved in the beginning with the OC Navigator platform, which is out there now as an open resource for folks. But we can guide them to food banks. We can help them find resources depending upon what it is that they need. But most of our clients are referral clients. They come to us through social workers. They come to us through the regional center, through the hospitals, very specific groups that send them our way. And so we work with them from that point on.
Now, you mentioned being reunified with children.
Yes.
Explain that. That would apply to me, at-risk children.
They are at risk, yes. And that's what our Resilient Families program is we work with families that have already had their children removed from them. A case is opened in the courts, and my mentors go to the courthouse, meet the families there at the day of their first court appearance, and work with them from that day forward, helping them to make sure that they meet the criteria set forth by the court. It is a completely voluntary program. So if they wish to participate in that, in mentorship, they have to go through their social worker. It's not like we just go and, you know, collect the folks from the courthouse. They have to be referred to us through their social worker. So, and then we have a lot of interaction with those families. We work with them to complete the court-appointed requirements in order for them to get their children back.
Do you have any positive stories there?
Oh, lots. I have, right now, six mentors that work for us. All of them were involved. All of them had children removed. And a couple of them actually came to us after our mentors had worked with them, and now they're working with us and helping other families. So there's a large reward on that side, intrinsic rewards for them. They feel so good about being able to help these families. And, you know, sometimes that means getting them off drugs. That means helping them find a rehab center. That means helping them with anger management. That means helping them find something that will satisfy that deep hole that they found themselves in, that created this environment in which they've had their children removed. And the important part about it is that my staff have lived experience, and they understand how it feels. Way down deep, they understand how it feels. So they're very empathetic. They're very compassionate. And sometimes, much to my chagrin, they overly get involved in the cases because they're so passionate about making sure that these families have an opportunity to be reunited. And so, yes, those kids are at risk, and we work very hard to make them the best possible outcome in the long term.
So speaking of your staff, explain what it takes to be on staff.
Well, they have to be willing to work for a nonprofit, which is, you know, that in and of itself says a lot. We don't have a lot of money to play with. We're constantly looking for donors and foundations and grants and things to keep us up and running. And that's why we have some of our contracts to keep us up and running. But the staff, I might be a little prejudiced, but my staff's phenomenal. They're the kind of people that just go that one extra mile. If you ask them for, you know, one thing, they're going to give you 25. Just to make sure that you have what you need. They're all very caring, very loving individuals, and are very passionate about the work that they do. So, you know, the requirements to be on our staff vary by program and vary by contract, depending upon what the contract is and who holds the contract for us, whether they have to have bachelor's degrees or master's degrees or no education at all. And so, again, it varies per program.
The children who've been through your program, mm-hmm. do they realize what they've been through?
Very often, yeah. You know, especially if they're older children. But I think a lot of the families, it's such a familial process. You know, everybody's involved. Everybody's working through it. And so I don't know that they are singled out or thinking out, you know, outside of the box, but they do recognize it. You know, even as families are reunited in that particular program, sometimes their kids have a hard time. They've had trauma. They've gone through a lot of trauma, whether it be homelessness or abuse or neglect or, you know, the struggle that their parents might have gone through. And so, you know, we work with the families to make sure that those kids have opportunities to be heard with therapy, to be able to get some of their needs met, to meet that kind of wound that was caused by all of that trauma. So we're very conscious of that.
And they're able to overcome it with the help.
Well, for the most part, you know, trauma is a tricky thing. It stays with us. It stays in our psyche. It stays in our hearts. And they may be able to overcome it. And that's really what we're trying to foster, is that resiliency so that they can overcome those things. But there's never any guarantee. You always want to be vigilant with the families to make sure that they are really trying to be conscious of what their children have been through and what the parents have gone through. It's been difficult for all of them.
Earlier, you mentioned senior services of sorts. Mm-hmm. Explain.
Well, for our group, you know, seniors, sort of just a generalized term in terms of our voice options program, that's open to anyone. We had a situation about, I guess it's been 2 years ago now, but it was precious. We had an 81-year-old gentleman who'd had a stroke, and he had not been able to speak for probably 8 months. And his wife found out about our program. And so she brought him in. And we worked on getting him a communication device. We showed him how to do it. We set him all up. And they went home and they practiced. And she came back to us and said, you know, he's just not interested in doing it. And so one of my staff, you know, talked to him and said, you know, this is a way to communicate with your wife. If there was anything you could say to her, what would it be? And he looked at his wife and he looked at her and he looked at the device and he said, I want fried chicken for dinner. And that was his response. And that was the first thing he'd said to her in about 9 months. So that was his, you know, way of saying, well, you know, I'll say it when I feel like it. And that was his, you know, so it was, you had to kind of be in the moment and watch the response on her face. She was so excited. She was in tears because he wanted fried chicken for dinner.
And so there was a device that enabled him to convey that.
Yes, it's an iPad, but there are a number of different kinds of applications that you can download onto an iPad that has what we call text to talk. So you can text in what you want and then the communication device speaks for you. Or there are symbols and icons that you can press buttons and it speaks those words for you. So yeah, he managed to figure out how to say, I want fried chicken for dinner.
And he keeps talking now through using that device?
Honestly, I'm not positive if he's still with us. Oh. But yes, and most of our families, we do a lot of children on the spectrum who are nonverbal and have not been able to communicate with their families. And once they learn how to utilize the device, it's a whole new world for them. The device is intended to give families the security of knowing that if there was an emergency, that they would be able to program that device to make a phone call or to communicate with 911 to get them assistance. And that was kind of the crux of the program. But the other side of it is so rewarding to watch them to be able to have those first communicative moments with their families.
How can people reach out to your organization if they want to volunteer or if they would like some services?
Absolutely. So our website is www.fsn-oc.org. And you can go to the website. You can call us. Our number is available there. You can come into the office if you like. Our volunteer opportunities are very specific because we don't have a lot of opportunities for folks to do things outside in our programs. But what we're looking for now is really folks that are interested in board service. We're looking for members for our board of directors. We are looking for folks who are bilingual, who are willing to come to some of our developmental screenings and help us when we have folks that speak Mandarin or Farsi, and we are primarily a bilingual Spanish agency. So we look for volunteers for that. We do work with teenagers when we do food drives or those sorts of things, and they come in and they help organize our supplies. And we have lots of food, lots of clothing, lots of things that need to be organized. So I always have folks doing that. So we just, you know, it's really dependent on what we need in the moment.
Thank you, Family Support Network of Orange County Executive Director Moira Byron, for being on Impact OC. And I thank everyone for tuning in. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Dawn Camber. Have an impactful day.
You've been listening to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping our community. Right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.